Wow. Unbelievable. This is nuts. I had to run away for a second. I had to load something up in my wife's car, and, well, I used a lot more time than I expected, but let's get it on. It's Friday. What do you want? The music we're going to open with for this second hour, my friends, is a piece that I play at least once a year, or when the subject gets so intense that it needs to be brought up. But in the scheme of things, my good friend Steve Voss, who I've shared with you in the past, is probably one of the most brilliant songwriters of his type that exists. Wrote a song some years ago that has much to do with the topic of a good portion of this second hour. Welcome to Perspectives on America. This is our second hour tonight. Hopefully it'll have a little bit more continuity than we had in the first hour. I do apologize for a few seconds of dead air time. My wife is going to be running out to take care of some things that I just cannot do tonight. I've got to stay here and take care of storm damage and things of that nature. 22nd day of January, 2010. Right here on the Micro Effect. I want you to listen carefully to the words of this song. I'm going to start from the beginning, because it is so important. It is one of the most moving pieces of music that you will ever hear. Steve Voss, Someone's Going to Die Today. Has this ability to tell a story, tell two stories that are greatly intertwined. Someone's going to die today. The first part of the story is a young woman who discovered she's pregnant, an unwanted pregnancy, makes the decision to get an abortion. Her young man is vehemently opposed to abortion, feels that he has a right to that child's life as well. and makes a decision to go down to the abortion clinic and take matters into his own hands. And so either a fetus is going to die today, or those who are running the abortion clinic are. Hence, someone's going to die today. I had forgotten that this is what I consider to be a horrendous anniversary. We pay so much attention in this country to holidays that are questionable in their import. Martin Luther King Day. Columbus Day, which we no longer celebrate in this nation. Washington's birthday, which has been segued into President's Day. We're supposed to celebrate all the presidents of these United States. It wasn't a matter of celebrating George Washington as a president, but as a truly gifted and great leader, the man who is acknowledged to be the father of this country. And we have Veterans Day and Memorial Day and Labor Day, which is assumptively to pay homage to those who labor for the welfare and the building of the nation, etc., etc., none of which takes place anymore. It's just a damned excuse for a paid holiday. And yet a day such as today, a day that very much like a December 7th, 1941, or a September 11th, 2001, days that, and I guess to other degrees, January 20th, 2009, days that in one form or another, for different reasons, for different people, are days that live in infamy. Today, my friends, marks the 37th anniversary of the infamous U.S. Supreme Court Roe v. Wade decision, which in effect legalized abortion on demand nationwide. The aftermath of this tragic ruling is the deaths of over 40 million, and that is an excessively conservative number. 40 million innocent unborn babies. It is no hyperbole to say that abortion is America's Holocaust. Think of it. Every American citizen today, 37 years old or younger, has never known a country that respected and protected innocent human life in the womb. Put it another way. When Hitler's Third Reich was at its zenith, the abortion rate was 40%. In 2003, the last year that our author Chuck Baldwin checked, the abortion rate of the county in which he lived was 39%. And Baldwin lives in the heart of the so-called Bible Belt. In fact, statistically speaking, the most dangerous place to be in America is not in an automobile without wearing a seatbelt, or in a commercial airliner with a potential terrorist on board. Statistically speaking, the most dangerous place to be is in the womb of one's mother. Dr. Bernard Nathanson once headed America's largest abortion clinic in New York City. And he admitted superintending over the killing of 75,000 unborn babies. And later he recanted his pro-abortion activity and wrote what may be the quintessential book defending an unborn child's right to life. The name of the book was Aborting America, wherein Dr. Nathanson said, "There is no longer serious doubt in my mind that human life exists within the womb from the very onset of pregnancy." Dr. Mildred Jefferson was a surgeon of Boston University Medical Center, a diplomat of the American Board of Surgery with many honors and awards. And she once stated that many people try to hide behind the confusion of not knowing what happens before a baby is born. But we do not have to be confused. We in medicine and science have a different name for every stage of the development of the baby, but it does not matter at all whether you know those names or not. When a young woman has not had much opportunity to go to school and she becomes pregnant, no one has to tell her that she is going to have a baby. I became a doctor, she said, in the tradition that is represented in the Bible of looking upon medicine as a high calling. I will not stand aside and have this great profession of mine, of the doctor, give up the designation of healer to become that of a social executioner. The Supreme Court justices only had to hand down an order. Social workers only have to make arrangements, but it has been given to my profession to destroy the life of the innocent and the helpless. Today it's the unborn child. Tomorrow it is likely to be the elderly or those who are incurably ill. Who knows but that a little later it may be anyone who has political or moral views that do not fit into the distorted new order. To that question, am I my brother's keeper? I answer yes, she says. It is everyone's responsibility to safeguard and preserve a life. A child is a member of the human family and deserves care and concern. How many physicians, scientists, teachers, pastors and missionaries and statesmen and musicians and businessmen and notable contributors to society have been murdered in the womb? At this point, I can hear someone interrupting, "What about cases involving rape or incest?" The doctor goes on to say that while these cases number less than 1% of pregnancies, consider this case history. A 12-year-old girl was raped and became pregnant. Get an abortion, you say. Congratulations, you just killed Ethel Waters. And as Dr. Jefferson said, just where does the acceptance of abortion lead? If we listen to the former governor of Colorado, Richard Lamb, elderly people who are terminally ill have a duty to die and get out of the way. And by the way, the source for that quote was the New York Times. How many of you remember Baby Doe in Bloomington, Indiana? The little baby born April 9th, 1982, Down syndrome in a Bloomington, Indiana hospital. The parents refused to allow a doctor to correct a defect in the esophagus that prevented eating because the child was born with Downs. The Indiana Supreme Court upheld the parents' right to make this decision. Despite many couples on hand willing to adopt the child, adoption offers that came in from all over America and an appeal pursued to the U.S. Supreme Court, Baby Doe died of starvation on April the 15th, 1982. Add to this blatant disrespect for human life the potential for mandated government-run national health care, complete with cost-related rationing, my friends, and one can only imagine how the value of human life will continue to decline in these United States. Plus, if you want to do some personal research that will really send chills up your spine, start investigating the fact that many scientists and researchers are seriously discussing genetic manipulation and genetic engineering. Good God! Our own government and military are already culpable in grotesque medical experimentation with both civilian and military personnel. Don't tell me you doubt that. It's been going on that we know of since the 1940s. Documented proof. Our own government and military are already culpable in grotesque medical experimentation with both civilian and military personnel. 2 weeks ago, we did a major program on fluoridation in the water, which, due to a major accident, became the experimentation of all time to manipulate the mind and its abilities and to slow it down and to make it somewhat lethargic. And it killed plant and animal and vegetable life. Our own Central Intelligence Agency has admitted to using military personnel as human guinea pigs for medical, biological, and mental experimentation under various programs associated with the now infamous title MKUltra. CIA officials say the programs have all been scrapped. Do you buy that? In addition, consider the testimony of one Dr. Carolyn Gerster, a physician specializing in internal medicine and cardiopulmonary diseases. Now, she obtained her medical degree from the University of Oregon Medical School in Portland. That's right up the road from where Virgie lives. She spent 2 years as a medical officer in the U.S. Army. Dr. Gerster once told Phyllis Schlafly's Eagle Forum that, quote, I was asked to become a member of the American College of Physicians many years ago. It is an honorary society of internal medicine. I was very proud right up until the day that the society gave the James D. Bruce Award for Medical Research to Dr. Saul Krugman for the following experiment. You see, Krugman had taken living hepatitis virus, MS2, and injected this living virus into 25 retarded children in Willowbrook Home for Retarded in upstate New York. And it was defended on the basis that they would probably get the hepatitis virus anyway. Do you remember several weeks ago on this program, I shared with you a rather lengthy dissertation from a woman who I think her name, and I'm going to be wrong here, was raised in Austria when Austria was taken over by the Germans in the late 1930s, and how she and her family had to move around to escape the Russians who were raping and maiming and killing specifically young girls and women and even old grandmothers. And how in one specific area they lived in where they were being protected, a bunch of retarded children were sent to the mountains ostensibly because they would be able to survive better and they would be able to better help them and train them. And those people were never seen again and they in effect were murdered. Why is this any different than abortion? Abortion, to me, is an abortion. Consider that, contrary to what most people assume, my friends, the vast majority of physicians graduating from medical school today, they no longer take a Hippocratic-type oath, an oath that binds physicians to the following. Have you ever heard the oath? I will prescribe regimens for the good of my patients according to my ability and my judgment and never do harm to anyone. I will not give a legal lethal drug to anyone if I am asked, nor will I advise such a plan. And similarly, I will not give woman a pessary or medical device to cause an abortion. That oath is never taken any longer. As Schaefer and Koop pointed out in their book, Whatever Happened to the Human Race, the Declaration of Geneva, adopted in 1948 by the General Assembly of the World Medical Organization and modeled closely on the Hippocratic Oath, became used as the graduation oath by more and more medical schools. It includes these words: I will maintain the utmost respect for human life from the time of conception. My friends, this concept of the preservation of human life has been the basis of the medical profession and society in general for years. And it is significant that when the University of Pittsburgh changed from the Hippocratic Oath to the Declaration of Geneva in 1971, the students deleted from the words from the time of conception from the clause. Today, the ageless principles that had guided the medical profession throughout Western civilization have been expunged from a majority of our physicians' training and practice. And the Roe Supreme Court decision had much to do with all of this. What is especially irritating about the whole abortion debate is the way the subject has been used as a political football by those on both the right and the left of the political aisle. While the Democratic Party proudly touts itself as being pro-choice, meaning pro-murdering unborn babies, it has been the so-called pro-life Republican Party that is mostly to blame for legalized abortion being left as the law of the land for nearly four decades. Think of it, my friends. The Republicans have dominated the U.S. Supreme Court appointments for 37 years since the Roe v. Wade decision. In fact, the 1973 court that released the Roe decision was a Republican-appointed court by a 6-3 margin. The same Republican-dominated court also rendered the Doe v. Bolton Supreme Court decision reaffirming Roe v. Wade. Consider this, if you will. The so-called pro-life Republican Party controlled the entire federal government from the election of 2000 to the election of 2006. Six long years of Republican domination of both houses of Congress, the White House, and the U.S. Supreme Court. And in all that time, not one single unborn baby's life was saved. Not one! And yet each year, Congressman Ron Paul would introduce the Sanctity of Life bill, and each year the bill would sit in the document room of the Capitol building and gather dust. What would Representative Ron Paul's bill do? Two things. First, it would define unborn babies as persons under the law. And secondly, under the authority of Article 3, Section 2 of the U.S. Constitution, it would remove abortion from the jurisdiction of the court. You see, had the pro-life Republican Congress passed Dr. Paul's bill and the pro-life President G.W. Bush signed it into law, Roe v. Wade would have been effectively overturned. And so why didn't President Bush trumpet the bill? Where was the Republican leader in the Senate? Where was the Republican Speaker of the House? Where the hell was Orrin Hatch and John McCain and Lindsey Graham and Glenn Beck and Rush Limbaugh? Where were Newt Gingrich and Sean Hannity? What was the National Right to Life Committee? Where were the tens of thousands of pro-life pastors and Christians? Because to be a pro-life pastor is to run your mouth. To be a Christian in this country today is to run your mouth, but there's no meaning behind it. There's no guts behind any of it. All of these same pro-life pastors and church members and conservatives refused to support Paul for president in 08 because he was not conservative enough. Well, I'll be honest with you. I personally didn't support Ron Paul either. There's a lot of reasons for it. Let's just say I know enough that I would not support him. Stop putting people on a damn pedestal. The ones that need to be put on a pedestal are those that have never had a chance. Some people oppose Ron Paul because he opposed the war in Iraq, which means they'd rather support a politician who promotes taking a war into unconstitutional wars but won't do a damn thing to overturn Roe and save the lives of unborn babies and support a man who demands that the Constitution be followed and actually had a constitutional plan to overturn Roe. God, no wonder Christ noted that unbelievers often have it over believers in the brains department. I remind you that preserving life and liberty is the primary purpose of government. Come on, read the Declaration of Independence. Don't just say it. Read the damn thing. At this point, I think it's safe to conclude that to pretend there's any hope that Washington politicians from either party will do anything to overturn Roe is pure fantasy. At this point, it's up to state legislatures and governors to preserve life in their respective states. Some states are beginning to do it. And when we come back from the break, we'll conclude our commentary on this issue. How many died today? What have you done to save any of them?
Her mind was made up the moment she first got the news. She'd find a doctor, have it taken care of in a day or two. She tells herself it's no big deal, no one's gonna know, just she will. It's her right to choose. She's made up her mind. So someone's gonna die today. All the angels gonna cry today. If she doesn't come to her senses, someone's gonna die today. His guns are loaded and he's got a plan to take the clinic out. His self-appointed judge and jury prayed about it. He tells himself he's on God's side. It's a holy war and some must die. Cry today. If he doesn't come to his senses, someone's gonna die today. The good book says thou shalt not kill, but people rationalize and do it still. But don't you know there's gonna be a price to pay? Someone's gonna die today. All the angels gonna cry today. If we don't come to our senses, someone's gonna die today. All the angels gonna cry today. If we don't come.
Welcome back, my friends. Jeff Bennett. Friday night installment of Perspectives on America. This, the 37th anniversary of the Roe v. Wade decision that legalized the murder of unborn children. And you see, amongst the difficulties that we look at, is the question Nevada Ace has posted in the chat room. Should women made pregnant by rape be forced to give birth? It's a moral decision of sorts. That woman is already going to be scarred for life. And I suppose to some degree, as that child would. I don't know the answer to that one, Ace. It's a question that's always bothered me. I don't have all the answers. I'm not sure I even understand the questions sometimes. Should I say that there should never be abortions at all? Well, there's certainly biblical connotations to that. I don't know. I guess I'd have to get somebody to guide me to a place in the Bible where it discusses abortion or whatever they spoke of or whatever they called it back then. I hate to shock some of you. I am not a reader of the Word, not on a continual basis anyway. I'm not a student of the Word. In other words, the Bible. I cannot quote chapter and verse. As a rule, I care not to quote it out of context. I don't pretend to be something I'm not. I do believe in a higher power. I have my own relationship with God, with Christ. I don't run down to church every Sunday waving the flag about it. It's a relationship I've had for an awful lot of years, but I will not be a hypocrite and get up here and purport to be something I'm not. Let's just say I'm not a church-going man. Gigi is right. No matter what the circumstance, it's not the baby's fault. It is condoned murder of an individual that is not given a choice. How does one take the First Amendment and apply it to the unborn child? Does that unborn fetus, that unborn child, have a right to freedom of speech? Does that unborn child, should that child not have a right to call out and make a decision as to whether they want to live or die? I mean, my goodness, maybe that's something that's never been approached. I don't know. I mean, that's the simple one that I'm hitting you with. But as Chuck Baldwin states, did I remind you that preserving life and liberty is the primary purpose of government? But, as he says, it's probably safe to say that, or to conclude that, to pretend there is any hope that Washington politicians will do anything to overturn Roe v. Wade. Oh, I fully understand that, Ridge Runner. Christianity is not defined by belonging to a church, but understand why I said that, Lynn. I said that because far too many people out there have this perception that Christianity is belonging to a church. Well, you know what? Let's put that in a different term. I don't belong to a church. I belong to the church. And those few letters make all the difference in the world. A church is something that's been developed by man, allegedly to pay homage to our Lord and Savior. It's something that the building fund, the retirement of the mortgage, the stained glass windows, the oak pews with the knee pads that we can kneel upon to play with our rosaries or whatever the hell else we want to play with. PJ said, until the fetus agrees to be aborted, you should not be allowed to do it. Nevada Ace says, no one can choose their parents. Is that fair? Enlighten me, Ace. I'm not sure I'm understanding where you're going with that comment. You see, my friends, this is why I like the chat room. This is what I always envision the chat room for. This is a topic that is so polarizing in this nation and has been for so long. For those of you who maybe just joined us, we're talking about abortion. Today is the 37th anniversary of the Roe v. Wade decision, which legalized murder. Let me explain something to you. And I've explained this every year for almost 10 years now. My daughter became pregnant out of wedlock. Thank God she never married the jerk. And it was scary. My daughter did not know what to do. The discussion of a potential... You guys are sick. I actually like these comments. We do need to lighten it up. Durrell says that Roe v. Wade is what Bush thought the people of New Orleans needed to do for relief. You got your choice, Roe or Wade. I don't care how you get there. We do need to find some things to laugh about upon occasion. I don't deny that. So my daughter's pregnant. The potential discussion of abortion came up. Thank God my daughter has listened to me for more years than I'd like to think of doing this program. I never sat down with her and had this discussion, but she heard enough of my work and the years that I had covered this issue that she made a decision that she was going to carry that child to term. That child was less than 20 minutes old when I held her in my arms. And although, as all children do, they create a degree of trials and tribulations, there has been much that has caused her to be that way. She is the love of my life to this day. She lived with us for 3 years, my daughter, my granddaughter. If my daughter had chosen abortion almost 10 years ago, there would have been a light in my life that never would have existed. Don't blame the children for the sins or accidents of the parents. And when I say accidents, in this case, maybe I am talking about rape. Nevada A says, a church according to Jesus. Okay, that's a different subject. I'm not against the subject. I'm going to concentrate more on the comments regarding the abortion scenario. Triple says that abortion is about the dehumanization of us all. Once the Marxists were able to convince us that abortion was okay, the next step becomes euthanasia. Death councils. Socialized health care, anyone? It is a very hard issue for many people to deal with. According to Fox News some years back, 30 states were poised to pass laws outlawing abortion if and when the U.S. Supreme Court ever reversed the Roe v. Wade decision. What I would submit, as Chuck Baldwin does, what these states need to do is take back their states' rights. Stop waiting for the damned U.S. Supreme Court to reverse itself and go ahead and stand on your own state authority and autonomy and outlaw abortion in those states right now. As legislators in South Dakota, Georgia, Michigan, Alabama, Indiana, Kentucky, Missouri, Ohio, Rhode Island, South Carolina, Tennessee, and West Virginia are attempting to do right now. Legalized abortion, my friends, is a national holocaust, an affront to our national character, a contradiction of established principles subscribed to from the beginning of Western civilization. Abortion is an insult. Legalized abortion. Look, the argument they use, here's the word, legalized abortion.
But if you don't legalize it, it'll go back to coat hangers in the back alleys.
It's probably been going on for thousands of years, ladies and gentlemen. And it's going to continue to go on. But for the state to sanction it, for the government, to stick their damn noses into it and say, son of a gun, we're going to go ahead and approve this here Roe v. Wade thing and let you start the murdering, boys. Damn these people. At what point in time do they want to control the population and come up and say, well, you're knocked up to the age of 16, sorry, we're going to abort you. Don't matter. Oops, sorry, slipped, killed you too. I mean, isn't that what's next? It's unbelievable. Unbelievable. PJ's right. Legalized abortion is merely legalized murder. Oh, we've only got plastic coat hangers now? Actually, Triple, that's not true. I go to a little Chinese-owned laundry over here in Avondale, Arizona, and guess what? They still use old-fashioned real coat hangers. Of course, they're probably made in China. Legalized abortion is a national holocaust. An effort to our national character, a contradiction of established principles subscribed to from the beginning of Western civilization. Legalized abortion is an insult to the principles of the Declaration of Independence, a bane of our national spirit, and a stench in the nostrils of Almighty God. That we, my friends, have allowed it to continue for 37 years. 37 goddamn years. And that's what it is. Don't get on me for having used those words, because I'm not using those words in vain. They are 37 years that have been damned by God. And that we've allowed it to go on all this time stands as an indictment against the generation of Americans and bodes ominously for the well-being of our posterity. Copy this date, Pastor Chuck Baldwin. Triple says, sorry, you know, he found plastic hangers in his area. Well, the plastic may be more sanitary than the other ones. Some years ago, I came across a silent movie. A silent movie. Most of you know that I am an avid film lover. I am very open. I enjoy the forthright, in some cases, brutal truth of Japanese films. Some of the marvelous... What's going on out here? European films of post-World War II era. A Hollywood film lover for most of my life, and very much a student and a teacher thereof. I believe the year was 1916. Now, I could be wrong, and I do apologize for that. I'm going to go through one of these moments where I just can't. My brain's not going to function. All right. I was right, baby. Bennett, you are good. Let me tell you a little bit about this film. I came across this film probably 10, 12 years ago. It is a film that I never heard of. Interestingly enough, the film was directed by a woman. A woman who at her time was considered the female Cecil B. DeMille. A woman who had been a sometime actress. Let me tell you a little bit about this film. An unbelievably, excruciatingly poignant and direct directed by Lois Weber, produced by her and Phillips Smalley. Doesn't matter who the various players were. What's interesting, I will tell you, is that Tyrone Power was the star in the film. No, not the romantic Tyrone Power from the 40s and the 50s. Tyrone Power Sr., his father. 1916 film in which a district attorney, Tyrone Power, while prosecuting a doctor for illegal abortions, finds out that society people, including his wife, use the doctor's services. He was presented with an obscenity case. A medical practitioner had been arrested for distributing indecent birth control literature. On the stand, he makes a case for his thesis that breeding and financial planning are integral to raising healthy and happy families, and that sex education and contraception information should be available to prospective parents. And yet, while all this time is going on, the district's attorney's wife has been keeping a secret from him for many years. You see, she's been seeing a doctor, one Herman Maffitt, who performs abortions so that her busy social life will not be interrupted by the inconveniences of pregnancy and children. She suggests it as an option for her friend, Mrs. William Carlo, who is with child. Mrs. Carlo has the abortion. Now the Waltons, the district attorney, they receive a couple of new guests to their house almost simultaneously. Mrs. Walton's ne'er-do-well younger brother and the maid's young daughter. Smitten by the brother's advances, the maid's daughter is seduced and soon finds herself, shall we say, in trouble. Taken to Dr. Moffat and then abandoned by the boy after the operation goes wrong, making her way back to the Walton mansion, she collapses and dies from a botched abortion. Following Moffat's arrest and trial, Walton examines the doctor's ledgers and realizes that his wife and many of her friends are listed as having received a personal service. I'm telling you this based upon the plot that we find on Wikipedia. Well, that is part of the plot. But you see, that's not the real basis of this. It's a portion of it. The film was inspired by the obscenity case of Margaret Sanger in New York. Co-writer and director Lois Weber was an ardent admirer of Sanger's efforts, and this film stands as one of the best surviving examples of Weber's social problem films. While the film presents an argument for birth control, it takes a firm stance against abortion, portraying the wealthy women as partaking in abortion on a whim when pregnancy threatens to interfere with their social lives. Now, according to some critics, the film also portrayed abortion inaccurately, suggesting that it was inherently harmful to patients, both physically and mentally. That is an inaccurate presentation? Let me tell you the basis, the title. Where Are My Children? When the district attorney discovered what his wife had done, he begins to realize, because this district attorney loves children, and there are numerous scenes when he's out walking the street and sees the children at play and just enjoys watching them, enjoys seeing them grow. And so after going through the trial and doing what he had to do and watching the death of his house guest and realizing that his wife had had two abortions, the question became, as he pointed his finger to his wife and said, "Where are my children? Where are my children?" 1916, the most profound piece of film work showing the devastation. The wife, she didn't seem to care. It was all about her. It was all about an intrusion into her life. Well, my friends, we have a lot in life. We many times cast our own lot in life by, in some cases, promiscuity. Unfortunately, at other times, it's due to unfortunate circumstances such as rape. Don't tell me you got pregnant by sitting on the toilet seat. Doesn't quite work that way. They can't swim that well. Abortion. It is America's Holocaust. Don't talk to me about 6 million Jews or 20 or 30 million Ukrainians and Catholics and Jews that were killed by Stalin and God knows how many millions by Mao Zedong. We are supposed to be above all of that. And yet we are not. In this nation, those who have continued to lay down and allow it to take place are just as guilty as the butchers that have done the abortion themselves, just as guilty as the Supreme Court that allowed it to take place. And with that, I close my week by saying, without apology, I am Jeffrey Bennett.
Made up the moment she first got the news. She'd find a doctor, have it taken care of in a day or two. She tells herself it's no big deal. No one's gonna know, just she will. It's her right to choose. She's made up her mind. So someone's gonna die today. All the angels gonna cry today. If she doesn't come to her senses, someone's gonna die today.
It brings back the sound of
his
music. Brings back a night of tropical splendor. It brings back a memory evergreen. I'm with you once more under the stars. And down by the shore an orchestra's playing. And even the palms seem to be swaying when they begin the beginning. To live it again is past all endeavor, except when that tune clutches my heart. And there we are, swearing to love forever, and promising never, never to part. What moments divine, what rapture serene, till clouds came along to disperse the joys we had tasted. And now when I hear people curse the chance that was wasted, I know but too well what they mean. So don't let them begin the beginning. Let the love that was once a fire remain an ember. They begin the beginning. Oh, yes, let them begin the beginning. Make them play till the we suddenly know what heaven we're in when they begin the beginning. When they begin the beginning.
Are you one of the millions of people who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs? For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste for the price of a cup of coffee by going to rbnhemppaste.com and ordering a trial pack of Happy Packets for $5 with free shipping. That's rbnhemppaste.com.
You're listening to Real Talk Radio, only on the Republic Broadcasting Network.